denying the validity of the process of emancipation, he spoke and wrote of the Jewish people attaining a normal status among the nations of the world. But for the masses who were gripped by his message and acknowledged his leadership, the goal was not normalcy, it was redemption. That indefinable feeling and urge that had remained inviolate in their innermost souls down the ages. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 166, Herzl and the Pope. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. In January of 1904, Theodor Herzl met Pope Pius X at the Vatican. The most prominent representative of the worldwide Zionist movement had come to meet with the most prominent Christian leader in the whole world to seek, if not an expression of support for Zionism, at least a statement that the Church did not oppose it. As I discussed in my Tikva lectures on statesmanship, the conversation that ensued, described by Herzl in his diary, is absolutely fascinating because in the end, this meeting with the Pope tells us a great deal about Herzl himself, and ultimately about the extraordinary events that Herzl helped set in motion. Herzl writes that Pius immediately rejected the possibility of supporting Zionism, saying to Herzl, quote, "We cannot give approval to this movement. We cannot prevent the Jews from going to Jerusalem, but we could never sanction it. The soil of Jerusalem, if it was not always sacred, has been sanctified by the life of Jesus. As the head of the Church, I cannot tell you anything different," end quote. Herzl adds that Pius told him that, quote, "the Jews had not recognized their Lord, therefore we cannot recognize the Jewish people," end quote. This response was not, of course, what Herzl had hoped to hear, but when we think about it, the answer he received from the Pope was not surprising. After all, throughout much of church history, from the early church fathers up to the age of Pius X, many, many church theologians had argued that the descriptions of the Hebrew prophets of the restoration of Zion was not to be read literally, but rather metaphorically, as a reference to the church. It was not to be read, according to them, as describing a literal return of Jewish observers of Judaism to the land of Israel. There is, of course, therefore, nothing surprising about the response of the Pope in 1904. What was surprising and fascinating was Herzl's response to the Pope's rejection. He attempted to convince the Pope to support the Zionist cause. Herzl, surprisingly, asserted to the Pope that the return to the Holy Land of the Jewish people should be seen by the Pope as having no religious implications whatsoever. Or, as Herzl recalled in his diary, quote, "I said that our point of departure had been solely the distress of the Jews and that we desired to avoid the religious issues," end quote. The Pope, in turn, replied that for him, politics and theology were intertwined, saying to Herzl, quote, "Yes, but we, and I as the head of the Church, cannot do this. There are two possibilities. Either the Jews will cling to their faith and continue to await the Messiah who, for us, has already appeared. In that case, they will be denying the divinity of Jesus, and we cannot help them. Or else they will go there without any religion, and then we can be even less favorable to them," end quote. Herzl, as described in his account, tried again, attempting once more to ignore theology, writing in his diary that he said to the Pope, quote, "But Holy Father, the Jews are in terrible straits. I don't know if your holiness is acquainted with the full extent of this sad situation. We need a land for these persecuted people." So Herzl writes that he said to the Pope. And Herzl further tells us that the Pope then asked, "Does it have to be Jerusalem?" And Herzl writes that he responded, quote, "We are not asking for Jerusalem, but for Palestine, only the secular land," end quote. These are Herzl's words according to his diary, and they are, of course, surprising, as the land of Israel outside Jerusalem is not secular, it is the Holy Land. The Pope, Herzl tells us, replied, "We cannot be in favor of it." And Herzl tells us that he asked the Pope, "Does your holiness know the situation of the Jews?" And the Pope responded, quote, "Yes, from my Mantua days. Jews live there, and I have always been on good terms with Jews. Only the other evening two Jews were here to see me. After all, there are other bonds than those of religion, courtesy and philanthropy. These we do not deny to the Jews. Indeed, we also pray for them, that their minds be enlightened," end quote. The Pope, Herzl writes, then referenced the embrace of Christianity by Saul of Tarsus, and then added, quote, "And so, if you come to Palestine and settle your people there, we shall have churches and priests ready to baptize all of you," end quote. So, Herzl tells us that the Pope said to him. Herzl left the meeting with the Pope, and 6 months later, he passed away. Pondering this exchange, we realize how striking and strange it was. Herzl was attempting to argue to the Pope that there need not be any theological significance seen in the event of world Jewry suddenly emigrating en masse to the Holy Land, that it could be understood as a purely political event. And this hints to us, as I further argued in my statesmanship lectures, that in the midst of Herzl's amazing success, there was also, on his own terms, a lack of full understanding of the total implications of what he sought to achieve. In the Jewish state, Herzl claimed that he had studied anti-Semitism, and he argued that he was able to offer a cure. He sought, through the founding of the Jewish state, to end anti-Semitism by achieving the normalization of the Jewish people. In the end, given all he achieved, and he achieved far more than almost anybody would have expected, Herzl did not achieve, of course, the end of anti-Semitism. And Herzl, who had originally sought the normalization of the Jewish people, ended up establishing that the story of the Jews is not a normal one, and it is not similar to that of other peoples. The story of the modern state of Israel serves as the greatest evidence in the last 2,000 years for the notion that Jews are part of a providential plan that God has for history. To study the story of the state of Israel is to see certain biblical prophecies fulfilled. Herzl sought to be a political figure, but the impact of his life, reverberating to this day, while of course political, extends far beyond politics. Here too, Yaakov Herzog's words, which we have previously quoted, are eloquent and profound. Quote, Herzl arrived at the concept of political Zionism in an attempt to find a rational solution to the dilemma of Jewish survival as it appeared to him in Europe at the end of the last century. Denying the validity of the process of emancipation, he spoke and wrote of the Jewish people attaining a normal status among the nations of the world. But for the masses who were gripped by his message and acknowledged his leadership, the goal was not normalcy, it was redemption. That indefinable feeling and urge that had remained inviolate in their innermost souls down the ages. Herzl's dialogue with them was therefore uneven. He spoke of liberation, independence, and normal status in terms of conventional political parlance. They answered him in terms of immortal prophecy, undying faith, and historic destiny. End quote. In other words, Herzl sought normalization, but he ended up proving chosenness. He sought the end of anti-Semitism, and we must ponder, as I did in my statesmanship lecture on Herzl, the fact that in this regard, Herzl did not succeed. Robert Nicholson, a friend of mine and a remarkable young Christian leader, once wrote in an essay that anti-Semitism, quote, almost always grows from a resentment of chosenness, the idea that the Jewish God appointed one nation, the nation of Israel, to play a special role in history, end quote. That's how Rob Nicholson put it. He then followed up this essay with another piece on this theme, an incredible essay that sought to rally Christians to fight anti-Semitism. In that essay, he wrote as follows, quote, to fight anti-Semitism, we need to understand its spiritual sources. This isn't just any old hatred or racism. It is a grand anti-myth that turns Jewish chosenness on its head and assigns to the people of Israel responsibility for all the world's ills, end quote. Rob further argued that the best response to anti-Semitism, quote, isn't anti-anti-Semitism, it is philo-Semitism, love of the Jewish people, end quote. And indeed, even as the miraculously reborn Jewish state has been a target of anti-Semitism, it has also been an object of philo-Semitism, with many non-Jews inspired by the story of Israel to read the Bible with fresh eyes. With the miraculous birth of the modern Jewish state, another wondrous event has made itself manifest. The fact that millions of non-Jews, millions of Christians around the world, celebrate the story of the Jewish state, see in it a sign of Jewish chosenness, as well as a profound source of faith in today's world. This is to a great extent an evangelical phenomenon. But as I described in an essay in Mosaic, a century after Herzl's meeting with the Pope, one can also point to Catholic theologians who are speaking in this vein. One example is Cardinal Christoph Schönborn, editor of the Catholic Catechism. A speech that was given by Schönborn in 2007 in Israel was summarized as follows in the Washington Post. Quote, after asking, what does Eretz Yisrael mean to us? Schönborn answered by stressing the doctrinal importance to Christians of not only recognizing Jews' connection to the land, but also ensuring that Christian identification with the Jewish Bible not lead to a usurpation of Jewish uniqueness. Only once in human history did God take a country as an inheritance and give it to his chosen people, Schönborn said, adding that Pope John Paul II had himself declared the biblical commandment for Jews to live in Israel an everlasting covenant that remained valid today. Christians, Schönbrunn said, should rejoice in the return of Jews to the Holy Land as the fulfillment of biblical prophecy. End quote. In the end, those Christians that join Jews in seeing a miracle in the fact of Jewish return often find thereby a spiritual and moral beacon, a sign of God in a world where so many have rejected biblical teachings. My friend Eric Cohn, in a fascinating article in Mosaic, put it this way, reflecting on the miracle of Jewish Jerusalem today. He wrote, quote, "Jerusalem, the ancient holy city reborn, stands for many as the city of hope, the spiritual center of a Western renewal anchored in the Hebraic moral system. In dark times, and religious Christians surely believe we are living in dark moral times, Jerusalem renews and rekindles the spirit." And Eric added, "Jerusalem forever, the Jews' city of hope, and once again the West's, is now the emblem of our shared purpose, to work with faith, political will, and moral resolve to rescue and defend our shared heritage from destruction and decay." End quote. Herzl did not bring about the end of anti-Semitism, but the miracle he helped set in motion is today a source of wonder and faith, not only to Jews, but also to so many beyond the Jewish world. We can therefore ponder how Jewish Jerusalem will serve as a biblical inspiration of faith in the years to come. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.